Havana is our destination worldview topic today with Mr. Peter Flaherty, and we're going to explore Havana, Cuba in his two-part series, Havana, Everything Old is New Again. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Roy.
How are you today?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. I was already chatting about you and didn't even have my mic up, so I figured I'd better get that straightened out.
I can hear you a lot better now. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you perfectly.
Great.
Great article. A super destination. Love Havana. Spent a lot of time there. And I like the idea, the statement, everything old is new again.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with that, if you will, Peter.
Well, I mean, Havana is a city that is so rich. It has so many different aspects of its history on offer for tourists. And I really have to say right up front, Roy, that I hope that at some point in the future, Americans will be able to visit again. The Cuban people are quite anxious for American tourists to start coming back to the island. And who knows? I mean, I understand the situation now is complicated, but they're ready. They're ready to receive tourists from all over the world. And I think what I tried to capture in the article, that everything old is new again, is that so many of the things in their history, the Spanish colonial period is showcased in old Havana, the period after independence when the city was a bit of a risque place for tourists. They acknowledge that, and you can see pictures of gangsters on the walls of some of the hotels. You can even buy a book about the mafia connection in Havana at the bookstores. Certainly the period of the revolution, which is already kind of fading in history, it's still there to be seen. Old cars still run on the streets. I mean, how they keep them going and new is beyond me. But
yeah, that is quite amazing. In
it
fact,
is. It really is.
There are a lot of people that collect cars would love to. Love to get their hands on some of those. And I agree with you, Peter. I Havana is a great destination. It we've been fighting time and time again to get our tourists back into there. I have no doubt that it's going to happen, and I don't know that one has to wait until post Castro. But
mm-hmm.
The thing is that even Congress has been pressing for it. There's just a certain element that seems to be fighting it, and quite honestly, none of us understand it anymore.
No.
You know, it's gone on for a long time, and as you say, we're ready for the change. They're ready for the tourism. Europe's going. You know, the Europeans are going there. The Canadians, as you well know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of the European hotel companies are building major resorts
right.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And meantime, we're kind of sitting on our hands. And but. It will happen, and it's a great destination, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just talk about how Cuba is changing to prepare for the, as you mentioned, for the post-Castro transition
right.
and its implications for tourism.
Well, I think the transition is already underway. I mean, a lot of people are speculating on the big changes that will happen when Castro eventually does leave the scene, but under the radar screen, much has already changed. I mean, he's really a figurehead now. There's a new, much more pragmatic group of people in the government who are running things. They're building new hotels. They're developing condos. They're really improving their tourist infrastructure. Still some things to work out. It's not easy to change money, and sometimes the bureaucracy can be a little inefficient and heavy-handed. Transportation is certainly an area they need to work on, but I'm really impressed with Havana, the way they've renovated the colonial center and been really helped with UNESCO money for that. The hotels have all received a major facelift. And the most fascinating thing for me is Castro is kind of reluctant, but still permitting greater role for private enterprise in the hospitality industry. There are privately owned restaurants all over the city. There are private guest houses opening up. He's uneasy about it as a communist, but I think he's practical enough, or at least the people now in charge are practical enough to realize that these are things that tourists want. They want high quality service, they want good food, they want nice accommodation, and you know, this is what's happening. I mean, these are major changes that are taking place. I've noticed them since the last time I was there in the late 80s. I didn't even recognize Havana.
How'd you find the pricing?
The pricing is extremely reasonable. You can get a very decent hotel. The one we stayed in was slightly outside the city. I think the whole package we paid for, which included our flight down and back, all the transfers to and from the airport, We didn't take the full meal plan because we did want to try to sample some of the different, you know, private restaurants.
Yeah,
that were. We just took the breakfast, which was a full breakfast. I mean, really, the breakfast buffet was one of the best I've seen anywhere and would have lasted, easily could have lasted us through till dinner. It was around 1,000 Canadian for a week, which is a pretty good deal.
Right.
And the extra tours that we took were also quite reasonable, the ones that the government-run tour companies operate. It's interesting that there are a number of different government tour companies all in competition with each other for the most attractive services and prices. So the tourist really has a lot to choose from, and they're working hard to work, you know, the kinks out of what is still a kind of heavily bureaucratic system. But clearly they're moving in that direction of more efficiency and more concern with the tourist market and its needs.
Now, did you find, or how did you find the restaurants once you got outside of the hotel environment? Were the restaurants up to par? I always like, when I go to Mexico, I like to go to little cantinas in these places away. How did you find that aspect of it?
Well, yeah, I think it's certainly moving now. At one time when the restaurants were mainly in the hotels, the quality of the food and service was, I have to be quite honest, not really that great. But
right.
With the opening of these paladares, as they're called, the private restaurants, basically you get the sense that you're really eating in someone's home. It's quite nice. I mean, the Castro has limited the number of tables they can have, and there are restrictions on advertising and signage, but half the fun is finding one of these places. One I mentioned in the article, Mami, which was in Miramar, a beautiful old house, and we ate on the balcony, the patio outside. We were served by people who lived there, and we had the seafood special, which I think was lobster. It was just outstanding, and we were sitting in this beautiful colonial backyard. It was like you had been invited, you know, by a Cuban family. The price was extremely reasonable. You can order wine or beer. Dessert is often included. I mean, there are many of these places, sometimes a little hard to find and not always written up in the guidebooks, but it's great. And a city like Havana has so many in different parts of the city, you can kind of add that to your exploration. You know, finding it is part of the fun.
Right. Now, but there weren't, were there restrictions on your travel?
I really didn't notice any. Now, once we were in Havana, as I mentioned in the article, we were recommended to take a city tour, a private tour, which we did the first day. Basically, it was the two of us with my friend and I, with the tour guide and the driver, and she took us. It was pretty much a half-day tour, which actually extended almost into the whole day. She took us around the main sites. It was good for orientation, but pretty much after that, we were on our own. You're free to move around the city. You can take taxis. Probably the best form of public transit. You can walk. I didn't feel that we were restricted in any way.
Now, you mentioned in your article the new developments of areas like Miramar, that they're now beginning to represent areas like Miami South Beach.
It looked a lot like that to me, and that's something I really was amazed to see. Miramar, I mean, a little history helps. Miramar was being developed in the late 50s, just before the revolution, as a kind of enclave for the rich and famous, and a lot of the embassies were there and still are. Many of the big mansions have been taken over by embassies of the countries that, you know, have relations with Cuba. The old Russian embassy is quite a place to see. It looks like a huge fort with a big telecommunications tower. I don't think it's nearly as important as it once was in Cuba, of course, because how things have changed. But the hotel we stayed at was right in Miramar. You drive along the street that faces the sea. You see shopping complexes opening up. You see condo developments, a big conference center, all kinds of construction, all kinds of activity. And I think that's the kind of area that they're thinking will represent the new Cuba, not just for tourists, but of course for business travelers too.
Well, the Cubans have always been a fun people and friendly. And
exactly.
Did you find, you know, they were always known for some of the great jazz clubs that they had. Did you come across any of that?
Still there. I mean, my friend and I actually are big jazz fans, and I really had wanted to go to Havana during the jazz festival, which they have, I think, every other year in December, but we couldn't make it for that. But you can hear music all the time, just about anywhere you go. There were a couple of excellent jazz clubs that we went to La Zorra y el Cuervo, which means the fox and the crow, was a kind of underground jazz club we went to a couple of nights, heard some excellent bands there. The Jazz Cafe, which is on top of a shopping gallery in Vedado, which is a sort of next to Miramar, another kind of swanky part of Havana. Excellent place. Chucho Valdez plays there from time to time. For an entrance fee of $10, that was included all of our drinks for the night. We didn't know that. We would have taken advantage of more if we had. And a wonderful music. Another place, El Gato Tuerto, which means the blind cat. Like, you can find anything really more upscale places, more kind of funky places. You know, the musical scene in Havana, I think, is probably one of the richest in the Americas. I mean, jazz is there, the traditional Cuban son music, salsa, dancing, whatever you want, it's there. You know, on a night in Havana, you could easily hit four or five places, and they're going late, and the Cuban people are there, the tourists are there. It's a real good way of kind of feeling the pulse of the city and not just being stuck in places, you know, where other tourists go.
Now, in old Havana, how the museums and art galleries, are they up to standard?
I think they're really, really making great strides. I mean, some parts of the city, as you walk around the old part, you will notice that there's still a lot of renovations going on, but there are some excellent museums. The Bellas Artes, which is the art gallery, is really worth spending a good part of a day. Museum of the Revolution, whatever your opinion of Castro's regime, it's a fact that, you know, that revolution is there. It's a historical reality, and it's something to see. I found it very interesting. You can see some of the old colonial churches and convents that have been restored. The cathedral is a definite spot. Just walking around old Havana, I mean, you can go into different places, but I think the experience is really probably best appreciated just walking around and examining the old squares and the buildings, stopping from time to time for coffee. You'll find music being played just about any cafe in old Havana. There's a house band that plays. There are street performers. It's a real lively place, and that was definitely one of the highlights of our trip, spending, I think, for a good part of almost every day we were there, we found ourselves in old Havana.
Now, you touched on American tourism. What is the general feeling for that? Does there seem to be an anticipation? Is it a friendly anticipation?
I think I would say it definitely is friendly. I think probably the only caveat I would add to that is that, you know, the Cubans know their history, and they know, the kind of tourism, not entirely, but at least partly, that they attracted in the pre-revolutionary period. I don't really think they want to go back to that. They want a different kind of tourist coming to Cuba now. They're proud of what they've achieved. They're anxious for change, no question. They do want to restore some kind of relations with the United States. It only makes sense to them. They're so close to it. They want America. They are not anti-American. They have their problems with, you know, the political side of things and the various administrations, but they'd be very welcoming to American people. They're in love with American culture. They follow basketball. They follow rap music, movies. They know, you know, probably as much about whoever the big figures in Hollywood are today or in the musical scene as any American would. I mean, they're tuned into it. So they're definitely waiting for the Americans to arrive, and I think the welcome will be a friendly one, provided that American tourists, you know, accept the fact that Cuba has changed and is continuing to change.
But if you just pause there a moment, Peter, we have to go to break, and when we come back, we'd like to get into a little bit further detail. So
okay.
If you'll hold for a moment, we'll
sure.
be right back.
Will do.
Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Oh, yeah. I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stuff. Over the world.
And we're back with a traveling man, Mr. Peter Flaherty, who is taking us on a mental journey through Havana. Welcome back, Peter.
Hi, Roy.
We were just chatting about the general feeling of the Cubans towards the possible arrival of American tourists. Let's expand on that a little bit, because I just think that, number one, you know, when a new government takes over, it's a matter of getting to the minds of the children. And once you school them and you get to the minds of the children, you've already made your point. You've accomplished, I think, whether it be communism or something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at that point, you've really done your work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a child in a normal environment. You just can only do so much. And at that point, they're on their own. And
right.
Whether there's Castro remains or somebody else, they now have their own opinions about this type of government.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one needs to move on from there.
Right. And I think the Cuban people really want to do that. One thing that struck me, and sort of in more informal, casual conversations with people I met there, these are the kinds of things they would say. They really feel, in a way, they suffered a great deal economically when the Soviet Union fell apart and the communist countries of Eastern Europe. That was their lifeline. But now they've had to sort of start from scratch and rebuild something on their own. And their view of their history is that for many years after independence, they were kind of, you know, dominated by the United States. Then the revolution came and they had to make a choice. They backed the Soviet Union and in a way were really dominated by them. Now they feel that for the first time in their history, they're in charge of their own affairs. And I think, although they've had to suffer and accommodate a great deal to those economic realities, they now do feel that quite excited about the fact that they're in charge of their own ship now and proud of it.
Now, has gambling come back? Have they opened any of the casinos?
I haven't seen any evidence of that yet. Who's to say it might be something that they're talking about behind closed doors? One thing, of course, that is noticeable, and I mentioned it in the article, is the phenomenon that's referred to in Spanish as jiniterismo. Jinitero is really kind of like a street hustler, a guy who will offer you cigars or
right.
a place to eat. The feminine form, jinitera, of course, means something a little bit different. That's
right.
a young woman who's basically offering her company to you and whatever goes along with that. Now, it's a fascinating thing because it is, in a way, could be considered prostitution. It's quite different from the more exploitative prostitution that certainly did exist in Havana before the revolution, and Castro, that was one of his first acts, was to really clean that up and send the girls to school and train them into something a little more socially productive. However, with the difficulties, the economic problems that they face, the special period, I don't know how Cubans live on their monthly salaries.
Well, and that's exactly right. And,
yeah.
and a lot of these young girls have children.
That's right.
And by maybe different husbands or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And, one has to give them a certain amount of credit. They're
yep.
taking care of their family.
That's right.
And, I've never objected to any of that. And that's a different form. I don't know that one, I guess prostitution is prostitution, but...
Well, it's the oldest profession, Roy. It's everywhere, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But when somebody is doing whatever they can do to, whether it be dancing or something
mm-hmm.
else to feed their children,
mm-hmm.
I think one has to give them a certain amount of respect. And,
yeah. I think so. And the thing is that, you know, we were, of course, the two sort of single middle-aged male guys traveling around. We were obviously targets for their attention,
right.
which was really quite flattering in some ways. I mean, these are young girls, very well turned out, as I say.
Right.
On their salaries, I don't really know how they manage to, you know, to buy the shoes and the clothes and whatever. But
take care of their mothers.
Yeah,
and...
exactly. You don't have to. I mean, they will certainly approach you with varying degrees of... persuasiveness, but once you make it clear to them that you're not interested, you don't feel at all. At no time in our trip did we feel put upon or hassled. I mean, a firm but polite no with a
right.
smile attached
right.
usually goes a long way towards letting them know that you're just not interested, but that doesn't mean you can't go to the club or wherever it is you're going and have a great time. It's not like other countries I've been to where you really do feel the hustle, you know, can be a bit oppressive.
Right.
You'll get it in Cuba. These are people who've suffered and are still suffering. Things are getting better, but you know, it's still a tough goal for many people there.
Right.
You don't have relatives in Miami who can send you a remittance every month.
So yeah, exactly.
It's very hard. But given that, I mean, it's a safe city. We walked around anywhere at night. We didn't feel at all in any kind of danger. I mean, obviously you take precautions as you would anywhere in any city, North, South America, wherever in the world. But Cuba's a very safe place.
And just getting back to that issue again, if they have these clubs and where you can drink, you can dance, and if you want to take it, to another level,
it's up to you.
I mean, that's certainly up to you. In any event, that's not uncommon in a lot of countries
that's
around
right.
the world.
That's right. And I mean, some people have condemned Castro for hypocrisy because he made the boast that he'd abolish prostitution, and now it's come in through the back door. But I mean, I think you have to cut some slack to countries, especially given the economic difficulties Cuba's been through. And it's not a big problem. It's not something that's
right.
in your face all the time. And
right.
you can go to Havana and just not even experience it at all if you choose to visit other areas.
Just drink their good beer.
Exactly. That's right, which is excellent. Yeah. I did that.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Now, let's just, if we can, touch on the colonial history.
Mm-hmm.
Take us a little walk along the Malecón, if you will.
Well, as you walk along the Malecón, of course, you'll see the Caribbean crashing in, and the waves can really be quite impressive on one side. Some days the taxis had to do a detour because the water was really coming in, and I don't know what's happened with I forget, we had so many hurricanes. One that did, I think it was Wilma, that did some damage there, and it may have affected some of the parts of Old Havana. But as you go along the other side, facing the seawall, you'll see beautiful, beautiful colonial Spanish era mansions and houses with porticos and arches. Some of them have been restored perfectly, and others are really suffering from the effects of the water and the salt. But it's a work in progress. Old Havana is really, is something that they're going to take years to. They've estimated it will take still another 10-20 years to restore the whole thing. But
and as you say, the hurricanes
yeah,
didn't
hurricanes
help
are
any.
A problem too. That's right. But you can see, you can walk into courtyards of old buildings dating from the 17th, sometimes even from the 16th century. Cobblestone streets, the bougainvillea and other kinds of flowers, just tropical plants, just cascading over the walls. I mean, the atmosphere of Old Havana is. I've been to other cities, Mexico City, other colonial cities in Mexico and different parts of the Caribbean, but I mean, Old Havana, UNESCO is right to classify it as a jewel of human patrimony. It's something
Absolutely.
That should really be preserved, and the Cuban government is working very hard to develop it.
Now, there's still the old cobblestone streets, and
mm-hmm.
which was always lovely, and you've got El Castillo,
mm-hmm.
and the Moro Castle, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Mm-hmm. There are actually three castles in Havana, and you can really see how important they were to the defense of the city in colonial times. So Havana has one of the best natural harbors in the world,
right.
And the Spanish government, of course, was very concerned with their colonial competitors, mainly the British and the French, and keeping them out. And there are three castles poised at different entry points, and you can actually stand at one. We went to El Moro, which is probably the best one to get a view of the city, and you can see
right.
The one facing it. And then there's the Cabana, which is where we went to the book fair. And actually, probably of the three, La Cabana is probably the best one to get a sense of a fort as being an actual city in itself. It's a place where the Spanish garrison was billeted, and there are streets there. It's like a little fortified town, and it's pretty much deserted now, but they use it to host big events like the book fair, which I mentioned in the article. My friend and I were just amazed at the crowds that turned out for that, and we would doubt whether a similar kind of book fair in Toronto, for example, would attract anywhere near the crowd of all ages, from parents bringing their kids, young people, old people. These are people who are really anxious to find out more about the world, and there were exhibitors from all over the Spanish countries of the world with their books being displayed. I didn't get any sense that books were banned or were restricted. I mean, maybe some political ones were, but the Cuban people want to get back into connection with the rest of the world, and they're dying to to expand and meet, you know, meet people from different countries, including the United States.
Did you get over to see Hemingway's house?
We didn't this time. We were close to it. Marina Hemingway was fairly nearby, and I would like to go there. We were nearby. One day we sort of took off from sightseeing, and we stayed at we spent about half a day at one of the old country clubs, which is called Havana Club. The rum is named after it, and we spent a very pleasant day there. It was a kind of a package deal. We got a lunch, we got the use of the beach, we got the use of the pool, and that was pretty much our beach day. And it was very near Marina Hemingway, but we had it on our list, but I think we'll just have to put that on for the next trip.
Yeah, because there is a lot of talk that had been falling into disrepair, and
yes,
they were finding a lot of the manuscripts and things that were there were beginning to deteriorate. Mm-hmm. But I understand that a major effort had been made to restore a lot of this, and I haven't heard anything recently about it. But it would be terrible to lose all of that.
Yes, and Hemingway, his books are on sale everywhere. I mean, he had quite a friendly relationship with Castro, and spent, you know, some of the last months of his life in Havana,
right,
Old Man in the Sea. I mean, he's an important figure to the Cuban people, and I promise you, Roy, on my next trip down, which I hope won't be in the too distant future, I'll check out Hemingway's house for you.
Well, I hope that by that time Americans will be traveling to Cuba and we can do it together.
That sounds like a good idea to me. You see what you could do to work on your president.
I will. I'm going to call when I get off this, I'm going to call my local congressman.
That sounds like a good idea.
Now, what about Central Havana?
Central Havana is another fascinating part. It's a little newer than Old Havana. Just to sort of do the geography, there's Old Havana, which would be the furthest to the east. Then there's Central Havana, which contains El Capitolio, which was the old Congress house in Cuba.
Right.
Chinatown is there. A number of important museums and monuments. Parque Central, which is a very nice sort of central park. Central Havana, you really get a sense of more of the 19th and the 20th century. There's a shopping street called Galeano, which is kind of past its prime, but it was a big shopping street in the 50s. And really, I would say if you wanted to experience the 50s time warp aspect of Havana, Central Havana is probably the place to go. One of the clubs we went to, La Casa de la Musica, was in Central Havana, and it put on a floor show that was like Vegas in the 50s. So if you're nostalgic for the 50s, there's a quick fix. Go to Havana.
Right, and you have somebody roll the cigars while you're standing.
Exactly, that's right.
So in Central Havana, I guess that it's more like the commercial district these days.
It was, yes,
yeah.
And to some extent still is. And it's a very different atmosphere from Old Havana. And then Vedado, which is sort of the next one over, is a different again. A lot of the nice hotels are there. The Hotel Nacional, which I write about, which is really one of the most famous hotels in
the Nacional,
Americas,
of course,
is there.
Yeah.
Great views of the ocean, of the seafront. They have a wonderful floor show there, which we took in one night, the Cabaret Parisien. The Tropicana is probably the most famous. We didn't go to it because we wanted to try the other one, and it was, I think it was even nicer. The Tropicana is outdoors. This one was indoors. It was a little less of a tourist trap, more authentic, and you really got a sense of, you know, sitting in a beautiful hotel watching a wonderful floor show, and then you can stroll the lobby, you can have a drink at one of the bars. It's the hotels themselves, even if you're not staying in them, are tourist sites in their own right and well worth checking out. I know the Sevilla, and which is just on the border of Central Havana,
right,
and Old Havana is where Graham Greene stayed when he wrote Our Man in Havana. Tremendous atmosphere, pictures on the walls of Al Capone and Meyer Lansky and people who stayed there. We went to the Riviera, which is could have been right out of Vegas in the 50s, built by Meyer Lansky just before the revolution took over, and you really get a sense of that era. And it's amazing, the furnishings and the bar, the waiters dressed in formal costume. You just feel like you're in part of a bygone era, but it's new, too. So everything old is new again in Havana.
Super. Peter, I understand we plan to make this a two-part series because there's so much, much more for those that have access to their computer. If you'll go to ttrn.com and click on Destination Worldview, Peter's article is there. You can read it more in depth. And it's a super article. And maybe when we do this again, I haven't talked to our associate producer, we can get a little bit more into some of the cultural aspects of it and a little bit more of the history.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that, Roy.
Peter, we really thank you for joining us today, and it's a very, very informative chat.
Thanks.
Look forward to doing it again.
Always a pleasure. Just let me know, and I'd be quite happy to come on again.
Thanks, Peter. Talk
okay.
to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Roy.
Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye now.
Well, Flaherty, and we will do some more on Havana, and we're looking forward to being able to visit it once again, and... after this break, I'll tell you who we're expecting next week, and we'll be back in a moment.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
You can check out our upcoming programs schedule by going to ttrn.com for the latest guest information. And next week, guests, we're going to have Evan Eggers. We'll be back with us with the cruise news. Antonio Graceffo, 4 years of living dangerously, and then Ponce, Puerto Rico with Neil Schwartzberg. Neil is always fun to chat with. And Cobb Island with Colleen Fliedler. So stay tuned.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.